Hi everyone, this is Andy Blow, and this is the Run to the Top podcast.
Hello everyone, this is Coach Claire Barthalik, the Planted Runner, and you might notice that your usual Run to the Top podcast feed is a little lighter this week. If you missed last week's announcement and are wondering where all of our other great daily content went to, it's over at the Run to the Top Extra Kick podcast. After talking with our team and many of you, we decided that the daily content works better as its own show, and the interviews can be highlighted right here at the Run to the Top. This way, the Extra Kick is just that. Extra content designed to make you a better runner on the go, and the Run to the Top can be a little more in-depth with guests that can teach and inspire us. And what that also means is that by moving the other 4 days of episodes over to the Extra Kick podcast, there is room for another day of awesome running content. So I'll be taking that spot on the Extra Kick and going deeper into what I'm doing each week at the Run to the Top. I'll have bonus content, do some fact-checking on what's said in the interview, and expand on each topic. I'm planning to get creative and have some fun with it, so after you listen here, you'll get a chance to go behind the scenes each week at the Extra Kick. This is a big change for us, of course, so please, if you like our show and our work here, we need to hear from you. Subscribe to the Extra Kick and the Run to the Top to get all of our episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And please be sure to write a review on iTunes. It really does make a big difference. Okay, now let's get back to my guest for this week, hydration expert Andy Blow. It's been a little bit of a British invasion on the Run to the Top with 3 British guests in a row, which is not intentional, but here you go. Andy Blow is a former elite triathlete with a degree in sports and exercise science. In his racing days, he found that he suffered more than most racers in the heat and humidity and would often end up in the medical tent, cramping and completely dehydrated, despite following common hydration protocols at the time. With trial and error, he finally figured out the mystery of his individual hydration needs and could conquer his races without crumpling in the heat. Eventually, with the help of a respected physician, he founded Precision Hydration, a company that not only produces hydration products, but it does unique patented sweat and sodium testing, along with education on how to create the right hydration plan that fits your unique needs. Precision Hydration has created personalized hydration plans for top-level athletes and teams all over the world, such as the English Premier League, International Rugby Union, the NFL, the NBA, MLB, NHL, Formula One Motor Racing, MotoGP, and IndyCar, as well as elite individuals from the worlds of cycling, running, triathlon, and more. Now, I just want to say right away that Precision Hydration is not a sponsor of our show, and this interview is not an infomercial for their products. This is all about having an expert in the field help us understand our unique hydration needs, and Andy is a wealth of knowledge on this subject. He was kind enough to offer a discount code if you happen to be interested in his products, and I'll mention that at the end of the episode. And now, here's Andy Blow. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Andy.
It's great to be here, Claire. How are you doing?
I am doing great today. You are a former elite triathlete, and you learned about hydration the hard way. I would love to hear some of your horror stories about how failing to hydrate properly affected your performances.
Yeah, you can definitely say that I learned it the hard way. I've spent my time in the medical tents of various triathlons around the world, and I've had some very, very depressing long walks along highways by the side of the road at the end of an Ironman triathlon, feeling like absolute garbage because of the problems I had with hydration. well, I learned this probably starting off around 20 years ago, around the year 2000, when I did my first Ironman event. And as a young guy then, I went into it with pretty high hopes. I was quite a fit athlete. I was doing well at short course racing, and I thought, I'm going to go to this Ironman and, you know, do really, really well. And it was a big recalibration of my my thought process when I realized how wrong I'd got it, basically. And it, and the short version of the long story is it was largely to do with my hydration practices.
Yeah, well, what were you doing wrong specifically?
I think back then I was very, very concerned about drinking lots of fluid, because I had I have an extremely high sweat rate. So when I go for a run or whatever, even if it's pretty mild conditions, I'll be the guy with the big sweat patch on my shirt. And that's always been the case. I studied sports science in the 1990s, when a big part of the messaging around hydration was that dehydration was the big issue for athletes, that we needed to drink and drink and drink as much as we could. And so I put those two things together and thought, if I'm a big sweater and if I'm doing long events in the heat, I'm going to need to drink loads. So I think a big part of my initial problem was over drinking. But at the same time, I was massively neglecting any understanding of electrolyte intake. So I was diluting my body, basically, and causing myself all sorts of problems.
Okay. Well, can you give us a quick history lesson on the advice that athletes have been given about hydration?
Definitely. I think that's important to put it in context for people, because if you went back over 100 years ago, most athletes were told not to drink when they were doing sporting events. And that was the received wisdom for a very long time. That probably persisted well into the 1960s, maybe even the 1970s, where the common thing you'd have heard trainers and people working with athletes saying was, don't drink, you know, during an event, it's bad for you, which is totally unimaginable to us nowadays.
Yeah.
But then we get this huge pendulum swing in the 1980s, 1990s, when, you know, the sports science community started studying hydration and started to see that, lo and behold, if we gave athletes fluid, they often perform better, especially in the heat. But then very quickly, this advice kind of got hijacked and extrapolated into a kind of a more is better philosophy with hydration. And unfortunately, that's what led to a lot of athletes starting to overdrink, overconsume fluids. And we saw all these cases of hypernatremia, which is a little bit of the problem that I suffered with, which is when you dilute the salt levels down in your body to a dangerous degree. And I was pretty lucky in that I got a bit of mild hypernatremia and it made me a bit unwell. And I had some pretty bad cramps and you know, didn't finish some races in great shape. But every year, and even happens to today, a few athletes can die from hypernatremia. And I think that big pendulum swing was, you know, from don't drink anything to drink as much as you can is where we got to probably 15, 20 years ago. And now we're starting to hopefully come back into more of a middle ground, a bit more nuance in the conversation. But it's taking a while. And that's a big part of the sort of messaging that we at Precision Hydration are trying to get out to athletes.
Yeah. So do you think it's true that being a little dehydrated is a lot better than being overhydrated?
Absolutely. I would say that the evidence tends to suggest that that's so, and to clarify that, probably that's during or after activity. I think a big goal for athletes is to start activities well hydrated, because what that allows you to do is it allows you to become a little bit dehydrated during the activity, not have your performance and health suffer. When we study the body weights of athletes that finish long distance events, especially, most athletes are dehydrated because they're a lot lighter when they finish the race than when they started. Mm-hmm. And to all intents and purposes, that's normal and that's natural. There's a lot of argument around exactly how much dehydration is good or bad, but fundamentally, if an athlete finishes an event in good shape, they're usually a little bit lighter than when they started. Having said that, I think that shouldn't be taken as advice to sort of try to minimize fluid intake. It's a case of just treading a fine balancing line, which is quite individual.
Okay. Well, I would love to go back to what you started talking about being sure that you're properly hydrated before you start an event. How do you know that you are well hydrated, and how do you get hydrated before you hit the line, the starting line?
I think the best way to start with that one is to describe how not to do it, because what a lot of us do, or what a lot of us used to do, is before a big race, especially one that occurs in the heat, is drink lots and lots of fluid. Like most runners, will increase carbohydrate intake in the days before an event, because we know that we can store carbohydrate in our muscles and in our liver so that we've got more energy to burn on race day. The same isn't true, unfortunately, with fluids. We're not camels. We can't kind of store up loads of extra fluid. But the temptation is to think, oh, well, I'll have a little bit more to make sure I'm topped up. And then that gets to be more and more and more. We've all been at events probably where you're at the sign-on or the packet pickup the day before, and everyone's walking around with a massive water bottle and sipping, and there's big queues for the toilets. And really, the way I think for most athletes to think about pre-race hydration is, yes, it's probably wise to have a little bit more fluid than you're normally having, just to, as an insurance policy. So an extra glass or two of water in a day, maybe an electrolyte drink. But each 24-hour period, your body does a fantastic job of rebalancing itself. So if you've drunk more than you normally do, the chances are you're going to wee more than you normally do.
Right.
And there's not much of a net positive. In fact, there could be a net negative if you drink a lot too much, because you pee out a lot of electrolytes. So the way we describe to athletes to prehydrate the best way, the best they can for a hot event, is actually to drink normally, but then in the final 24 hours to have a very, very strong electrolyte drink, maybe the night before, but certainly about an hour to 90 minutes before the start of the race. Because when we take a very strong electrolyte drink, and I'm talking about something which is, you know, like three or more times stronger than a standard Gatorade or something like that, the extra salts in that pull fluid into your bloodstream. They hold it there. So you're effectively what's called boosting your blood plasma volume. It just means you've got more blood. And that is like having a little bit of an extra reserve tank on the day. So that actually benefits you. Whereas just drinking tons and tons before, even if you're weeing clear, which a lot of athletes kind of aspire to do because it's allegedly a sign of good hydration, it can actually be a sign more of overhydration. So okay. I would say, To most athletes, it's a case of a little bit more is good, because we know athletes, that's always a dangerous thing to say. Because if you say more to an athlete, they 10 times it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I was looking at the back of a thing of salt that I have, and salt has about, 600 milligrams per quarter teaspoon of sodium in it.
Yeah.
So can I just, take my bottle of water and throw a little sodium in it and call it good?
Well, I mean, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that approach, other than the fact that, especially if your sodium requirements are quite low, because a few hundred milligrams of sodium in some water, with salt is probably going to do you more, it's going to do you more benefit than harm. The problem comes, though, is that if you're trying to actually make a sort of put a quantity of sodium into a drink that's going to be really effective at hydration when you're losing a lot of sweat and a lot of fluid, or trying to prehydrate, the amount of salt you'd have to dump in would be so high that the water would taste almost like seawater.
Ah.
And it would be really unpleasant on your palate and on your stomach, and probably make you feel quite queasy and quite sick. But a big reason why companies make sports drinks that have higher quantities of sodium in but don't use table salt, so NaCl, but use things like sodium citrate or sodium carbonate, is because you can deliver more sodium into the body, which is the electrolyte that counts when it comes to blood volume and hydration, without that excessively off-putting salty taste that can make you feel quite sick and quite queasy.
Okay. Well, great. So, can you just tell us what we should drink? I mean, we athletes, we just want some clear advice. So, what should I drink?
that's what we get asked all the time. And it's one of those classic questions where the only good answer is that, Claire, it depends.
I know, the classic answer.
Yeah, and that's not a cop-out answer, although some people see it as such. But I think what we can say is, the most helpful way I find to break this down for athletes is to say, look, we can either break this down for you as an individual or by the type of event that you're doing, and probably the best way is with a combination of those factors. So we can kind of take short events for all athletes. And when I say short, it's probably less than an hour, maybe for some really good runners, maybe less than 90 minutes, and say, do you know what? In a shorter race, as long as you go into it well hydrated, having not overdrunk or underdrunk beforehand, and as long as you drink if you're a little bit thirsty during that event, then you will be absolutely fine. You know, that's going to get you covered, because the human body, especially a well-trained human body, is more than adequately prepared to run for an hour or so without significant intake of fluid. As we described, you'll end up a little bit dehydrated afterwards. You'll easily recoup that in whatever you drink afterwards, and life goes on. You know, it's all normal. When you get beyond that 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours, it becomes a lot more about the it depends thing, because 2 hours running in the heat in North Carolina is going to be very different to running 2 hours in the cold in Scotland, you know, in the winter. And really, as soon as we get to that longer period and at a point when sweat losses are high, we start having to be a bit more thoughtful about what we replace. And, you know, this is where individual variation comes into it as well, because some athletes will lose tiny amounts of sweat. Some athletes will lose less than 12 ounces an hour of sweat, and some athletes will lose 64 ounces of sweat per hour.
Big difference.
And maybe even more than that. And of course, then that's why a one size fits all. We could give you like an average figure, but an average is really misleading if the highest point away from that and the lowest point away from that have a big, you know, difference. And so what I would say is that, you know, it is individual. It depends on mainly on two physiological factors, which are how much you sweat and how much sodium you lose in your sweat, because both of those factors vary quite a bit from person to person. And then subsequent to that, it obviously depends on the duration of the exercise and the environment that you're in. And essentially, I think anyone who's operating in a warm to hot environment, who's going for more than 90 minutes to 2 hours, or doing lots of hard sessions on back-to-back days in that warm environment, they're the people who benefit from really understanding their individual hydration needs a lot closer. And that requires a bit of investigation. I mean, it's not difficult stuff, but
okay,
Measuring your own sweat rate or whatever.
Okay. How do we do that? How do we measure our own sweat rate, and how do we measure our sodium losses?
So measuring your sweat rate is very easy. You need a set of scales, weighing scales. You weigh yourself before you go for a run. You go out and run. You towel yourself down and take off any of the sweaty clothes when you get back. And then you weigh yourself when you get back. And the difference in your body weight will be roughly the amount of fluid that you've sweated out. Because in that constrained time period, you might have burnt a little bit of glycogen or stuff, but fundamentally your body weight is changed by the water loss. And if you do that a number of times, you get a really good picture of how many ounces of sweat you'll lose in an hour or whatever. And that is really useful information, because it allows you to start to say, okay, well, am I a 12 ounces per hour sort of person, or am I 20 ounces, or am I 30 ounces? And that helps you to calibrate your range of sweat loss. And we've got a downloadable spreadsheet on our website, actually, that we can send you a link to. So if anyone wants to they can just download that and punch their numbers into it, and then it will spit out a sweat rate. And so once you've got an idea of sweat rate, that's really useful. And you should do that in lots of different environmental conditions, obviously, and at different intensities of running to get a really good picture. But then the sodium concentration of the sweat, this is the thing that was a game changer for me as an individual, because I investigated the salt loss in my sweat. I had a test in a hospital all those years ago, because a friend of mine who was a doctor had said to me, Andy, looking at you, I think your problems are suggestive of someone who's losing a lot of salt. And so I had this sweat test, and the doctor said to me, oh, well, you're losing like 1.8 grams of sodium in every liter of sweat, in every 32 ounces of sweat, which is a lot. You know, that's in the population range, that puts me in the top sort of 5 or 10% of salt loss in sweat. And so my issue was this high sweat rate and high sodium content meant that my electrolyte deficit after a couple of hours or more was huge. And for me as an individual, having the test to tell me that was very reassuring. But actually, when I look back, if I'd have had some information, you know, about how to even estimate that or judge that I was losing more salt, I probably would have been able to make a good guess at it, because I used to see salt marks on my eyebrows when I did a long run. You know, I would if a sweat drips in my mouth or goes in my eyes, it stings like hell or it tastes really salty. So there's lots of ways. And if someone kind of thinks that they, a lot of athletes that we've tested, when you ask them, do you think you lose a lot of salt in your sweat or not? And when we've correlated that with the actual sweat test data, you see a really strong correlation between those that lose loads of salt and not. So you can estimate it, and it's and you probably, if you're on the very high end, you know. If you're not sure though, there are ways of actually testing it. You know, we have a test that people come to see us for. We've got lots of test locations around the US and the UK and other countries. But I would say, you know, the first port of call really is to kind of to do a bit of a self-assessment and ask yourself questions like, do I feel way worse in the heat than I do in the cold, or way worse than compared with people of a similar fitness level? Do I often get muscle cramps? And like, muscle cramps is a controversial one, but
yeah, I want to get into that. I want to get into the muscle cramp part.
We should come back to that one for sure. But lots of people that suffer with muscle cramps seem to lose a high amount of salt. The obvious ones that I've mentioned, salt stains on your kit and clothing and on your face. And a huge one as well is a combination of craving salty foods. So if you often feel like you want to add salt to your food, it can be your body's way of telling you need a bit more. And also low blood pressure. So I used to frequently suffer from low blood pressure. If I stood up very quickly from a chair or from a lying position in particular after a training session, I'd all lightheaded and feel like I'm going to faint. And that's because, you know, salt loss reduces blood volume, which then lowers your blood pressure. So those kind of things, if out of all those sort of four or five of them ring a bell with you, it could be that you're someone who's losing a bit more salt. And therefore, when things get hotter, when you're going longer, replacing more might be useful.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's talk about cramps, because I have a pretty high level master's athlete that I coach, and he is very, very fast. He's a 227 marathoner, and he's almost 50 years old. And, wow. And he often suffers in cramps. And for the most part, it's at the end of the marathon. Yeah. And he, God bless him, just powers through it. And we have not been able to figure it out. We think that it's a muscle issue, but he is a strong, hard worker. And so it's really hard to figure out. Can you help, explain the cramping issue?
Yeah, cramping is a really fickle one with a lot of people. But it is one of those where, like the whole pendulum swing of how much to drink, there's been this whole two camps set up. With it used to be thought that there was a lot of anecdotal evidence that people who suffer from dehydration or high levels of salt and fluid loss would suffer with cramping. So it was deemed this dehydration electrolyte imbalance theory of cramping. And then probably more recently, there's been a trend towards people saying, well, actually, not all cramps are related to dehydration electrolyte imbalance, because sometimes we see cramps that happen early in races. Sometimes we see cramps that happen in the cold. Sometimes we see cramps in people who we measure their sodium levels in their blood and they're totally normal. So there's another theory around neuromuscular fatigue and this sort of thing, which tries to explain cramping at the level of the spinal cord and the Golgi tendon or organs in the muscles. And where we're at the moment, I think, is that neither of those theories kind of completely take care of what's going on, but they've been set up as like opposing arguments, which is quite unhelpful, because your classic case of this guy, 227 marathon, at the end of the marathon, he could well be starting to become, you know, either dehydrated or have a bit of an electrolyte imbalance, because especially if he's running fast and in the heat, he's going to have sweated out a lot at that point. But also, he's going to be experiencing quite a lot of fatigue, and he's going to be low on glycogen, and his muscles are going to be quite damaged because of all the pounding that's gone on. And a marathon is a really interesting one because, you know, up to kind of half marathon and stuff, athletes can often train, pretty much simulate races in training. You know, marathon is the kind of cutoff point where no one really, or not many people at a serious level anyway, run a full marathon, certainly not at full pace in preparation. You save that for the day. So you're always kind of just jumping into unknown territory.
Right.
And so for me, I think my view on cramping is that in a lot of cases like that, we can certainly try with an intervention that involves increasing sodium intake, increasing fluid intake with that maybe, or maybe depending on what the athlete's currently doing, like adjusting those parameters and seeing if that works. Because about 7 or 8 times out of 10, I would estimate that can have a positive impact, because I quite often think cramps that happen late on in endurance activities have a component that's related to electrolyte imbalance. Now, the mechanism behind that is probably to do with fluid shift in the body, because when we sweat, we're obviously losing fluid from the extracellular compartment out into the atmosphere, but internally within the body, fluid shifting from within muscle cells and in within the body's cells in the intracellular compartment into the extracellular compartment to balance it out. And the reason that I think, I don't know what the exact mechanism is, and I don't think anyone does, but another group of people who suffer with bad cramps when they have large fluid shifts in the body are people who are on kidney dialysis. So when you hook people up to a dialysis machine, if they've got fluid to be taken off very quickly, which that quite often, if you read a lot of the case reports, results in quite bad muscle cramping, and they have to slow the filtration rates and the rate of fluid movement. And although those two things are completely separate in one regard, they're very, very similar in terms of what's happening to the body in terms of fluid shift.
Yeah,
and so
interesting.
For me, and it's the same with people who get hypernatremia, actually. A lot of doctors will see people getting cramps in bed in hospitals who've got hypernatremia, which is related to drugs or diuretics they're taking and that kind of thing. But a sign that they might be coming in hypernatremia before they do blood tests can be that they're going to cramps. And if we can correct the sodium fluid imbalance that occurs quite rapidly, then quite often you see alleviated symptoms. So, but that's not to say I always can counter those examples though with the fact that as a triathlete and as a cyclist, if I jump on a bike now, because I'm not very well conditioned for cycling these days and it doesn't fit me particularly well, I can get cramps really quickly in a ride, which is to do with the position my muscles in and not being properly trained. So I think sometimes, especially with novice athletes, sometimes they get cramps early in their training career that happen just because it's part of the adaption process of getting fitter and they're overstressing their muscles in a way they're not used to, and gradually it gets better. So again, I'm afraid it's not a very conclusive answer.
Well, like everything running, it depends. I've got another one for you. Drink to thirst or drink to plan?
I think drink to thirst a lot of the time, and a lot of predominantly in the shorter and events and in cold weather conditions. I think at some point, and it's hard to define an exact point, but at some point when you're going for more than a couple of hours and the weather gets hot, then drinking to a plan becomes increasingly important. Because if you drink to thirst, we tend to see people ending up a little bit more or quite a bit more dehydrated than if they drink to a schedule, which, as I say, is fine in a short event because we're done and dusted before that dehydration becomes catastrophic. If you drink to thirst in the first 3 hours of an Ironman event that's going to take you 9 hours, then it may be that you become very dehydrated after 5 or 6 hours, and then you're at the point of no return and you've got a battle on your hands to come back. So, you know, one of the classic things the classic situations that we work with in that scenario is cycling, long distance cycling races. So we work with a lot of pro tour cycling teams, and those riders will what we would term like over drink in the early stages of the race, because not to a huge extent, but more than they feel like they need to, but it's because they've learned to, because later on when the racing gets a bit spicy, they might not get as much chance to drink, and also they know that they don't want to be going into the later stages in deficit. So the front stages are about staying in front of the problem, and then you allow that dehydration to happen naturally over the later part. And I think that's a good strategy for runners doing longer events.
Yeah, that's definitely, you've described me perfectly. I am a camel and I hate to drink. And so at the beginning of a marathon, I have to force myself to drink because I know that I need it. I definitely do not drink to thirst. And so it's good to know that I'm not doing something wrong there.
No, 100% not. I think if you figure that, and that's the sort of the punchline with all of this, is the whole learn to understand your body and your responses, because if you treat it as a trial and error problem, like a lot of people do with many things in running and training, that's when you'll get to the right answer for you ultimately.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about dehydration in races. So there's a pretty common myth that if you're 2% dehydrated, that's too much. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that came about, I think, because of a lot of lab studies that saw a reasonably statistically significant decline in performance for people who'd lost 2% of their body weight. But the things which count against that theory are it certainly doesn't appear to be universal. You know, when you go out into the real world, marathon runners have been studied extensively with this, and especially some elite marathon runners. And it's been shown that Haile Gebrselassie, when he ran the Dubai Marathon, he lost something like 8 to 10% of his body weight throughout the course of the race. And he was running 204, you know, so he can't be accused of fading in the final stages or anything like that. He was still going great. But he appears to be, when you look at the data on that, he appears to be like a pretty much an outlier or one of the more extreme outliers. We definitely also see people whose performance starts to deteriorate when they are 1% or 2% dehydrated. And I think in my experience, 2% is not a bad threshold to be around for most people, but going and maybe even going a little bit beyond that in longer and hotter events. But again, it's one of those things which is individual, and it's really hard to draw a line in the sand. I think what we can say is that maintaining the body weight is not necessary or is actually probably counterproductive. And also there'll be a point somewhere between 5%, maybe 8% where most people will fall off a cliff completely. So we can say with a degree of confidence, like maybe 1% to 5%, but drawing a line at 2% is a bit too arbitrary.
Okay. So how does somebody come up with a hydration plan? I mean, do we just go out and run and see when we fall off the cliff, or what do you suggest? Obviously trial and error, but let's say I'm brand new to this whole thing. What advice would you give me?
I would say it's a case of trying to start to figure out the characteristics of your body, for example, to begin with. So the sweat rate measurement, which is really easy to do, should be something which people do pretty early on, because if you can do that a few times and then start to figure out, okay, well, you know, a low sweat rate would be, you know, 12, 14 ounces of sweat per hour or less. I would say for a runner in moderate conditions, in warm conditions, but not super hot, an average sweat rate is going to be something around about, you know, 30, 34 ounces an hour, something like that. And then if you've got a super high sweat rate, you could be up at 60 odd ounces. And just by having the knowledge of where you sit on that continuum, that gives you a bit of an idea of how aggressive you might need to be with fluid replacement. When it comes to the intake side of things, again, if we start at the higher end this time, I very rarely see runners that can comfortably drink more than 32 ounces an hour. There are a few. And cyclists, it may be a little bit more than that because it's easier to drink on the bike. But if we're talking about runners, then if you're already drinking up to or close to 32 ounces an hour, then going looking for a way to intake more fluid is unlikely to be productive, because your body just can't absorb. Most people's bodies can't absorb much more than that. So that starts to calibrate us to saying, well, okay, it's obviously somewhere between 0 and 32. And I don't think it's a bad rule of thumb for people to start playing around with like 12 to 16 ounces of fluid an hour when they're running and moving the needle from there. Now, that's still a fairly wide band. But what I would say is, if you look at yourself and go, well, what best describes me? Am I a big guy who lives in a hot environment, who sweats a lot and does quite long runs? Well, you're probably going to be drifting up from the 16 ounces closer to the 24 or 32. If you're saying, actually, I'm quite a small guy, I live in somewhere cool and don't run for so long, maybe I'm closer between the 0 to 12 or 0 to 16. And so then it is about trial and error, and that's based on how you feel, and it'll be a bit different from day to day. But that's the kind of zone I'd start playing in and see how you get on.
And again, just like glycogen, we're not trying to replace everything we lost during the actual event. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say you want to, it's all about performance and feel good factor at the end of the day. You want to drink enough so that you finish in good shape, so you're not getting excessively thirsty. And then I've definitely found that there's a bit of individual variance in it, but you know, for me, if I'm running for 2 hours, then I'll need to drink at least 16 to 24 ounces an hour in those 2 hours to feel really good at the end. I can slog through it if I don't drink anything or have a very small amount to drink, but it's remarkably stable once you get into that zone. But that'll certainly also leave me in a fair deficit. So I'll probably be 2 or 3 pounds lighter at least at the end of that run. But another interesting thing for runners to do if they're keen to monitor their hydration regularly is if you weigh yourself most mornings, you know, you get up, you go to the toilet and you weigh yourself first thing. If you've had a really hard training session the day before and your body weight's like 1 or 2% down, that can be a sign that of inadequate hydration over the course of that time between those sessions. And what I found is that the difference in performance of a single session, if I get a little bit dehydrated, is relatively small. But if I just drink that little bit more and reduce that deficit slightly, then my recovery for the next day can be massively better, especially in the heat. So I would say it's finding where that fine line is for you. It's like, yes, there'll be a deficit, but it needs to be enough that you can make it up within the next 24 hours so you're ready to get up and go at it again.
Okay, so that was actually going to be my next question is, after the race, what do we drink?
Beer, normally.
Perfect. With a little salt on top, or?
could be. I think after a race, most people are, you know, letting their hair down or whatever. But the key thing is that if you're recovering, if you want to recover fast, it is very strong evidence to say that, look, stronger electrolyte drinks or salty food with lots of fluids helps you rehydrate way faster than just drinking tons of water. So again, it's a bit like the pre-hydration thing. It's like salt your food or put salts in your liquids, and then you'll find your body holds onto that fluid way better.
Okay, so beer and French fries are what you're recommending, right?
100%, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Well, I think that has helped us understand hydration a lot better. And we will put links in our show notes to Precision Hydration. And plus, you are offering our listeners a little coupon. So I'll talk about that in just a bit. But before I let you go, Andy, I have a few questions that I ask everyone.
Sure.
The first one is, if you could go back and talk to yourself when you started running or when you started triathlon, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, that's a good one. I would say there'd be two things. One is the obvious one that I would say, put more salt in your drinks, because that's going to help you. But we know that one. Mm-hmm. The other one would be, don't start too fast in all your races, because actually a good even or negative pace judgment will see you a lot closer to your goals normally.
Perfect. Good advice. What is the greatest gift that running has given you?
Headspace and time to think.
Okay, good one. And finally, where can listeners connect with you, Andy?
If they jump on the web to precisionhydration.com, we're a really small and friendly team. We can be reached at hello@precisionhydration.com on the email. We're also on the usual Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're usually at Precision Hydration, and they can DM us on there. The only exception is on Twitter, we are at The Sweat Experts. So you can reach us through those as well.
Perfect. Well, it is August right now as we are recording this, and I think a lot of people are still melting out there in their training sessions. So you've given us a lot to think about. So I want to thank you, Andy, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
No, I've really enjoyed chatting, Claire. Thanks a lot.
So are you a salty sweater like Andy? Do you have problems in the heat? Even though as a coach, I've learned a lot about how endurance runners should hydrate, I still learned a lot from this interview. I suspect that a lot of people who have trouble in the heat are not preloading sodium like he suggests. It can make a real difference to have the extra electrolytes on board and the extra fluids. I also like that Andy suggested that you need to have a plan, but you also need to be flexible with it depending on how things go. If your stomach is sloshing with liquid, but your plan says drink more, don't drink anymore. I know that sounds obvious, but when you're in the heat of the race, pun intended, you can't always be sure that you'll make the right decision. So imagine all the scenarios both good and bad, ahead of time. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Andy is giving our listeners 15% off their first order if you'd like to check them out at precisionhydration.com. Use the code RUNTOTHETOP to get it. They also have a cool free video chat feature if you'd like to ask their team any of your hydration questions. And that's it for the Run to the Top for this week. If you like this topic and want to explore it deeper, head on over to The Extra Kick to learn more. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner. Have a great run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.